is our top stories. Iran fires multiple new generation ballistic missiles and operates offensive drones during a major military drill. China says it firmly opposes new U.S. sanctions against several of its officials and companies over alleged misdeeds in the South China Sea. Also ahead, official figures show the U.K. economy shrank by 2.6% in November due to fresh restrictions imposed to stem the coronavirus. Welcome to the program. Our top story, Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has launched major military exercises in the central desert of the country. The first stage of the maneuvers kicked off with firing surface-to-surface ballistic missiles and operating bomber drones. Missiles equipped with detachable warheads are guided from outer space, and are able to penetrate into the enemy's missile shield. The exercises have been held in the presence of IRGC Commander-in-Chief Major General Hossein Salami and other senior military officials. Salami hailed the drills as successful, adding that using new technology in controlling and directing missiles and drones was one of the main features of the maneuvers. Head of IRGC's Aerospace Division, Amir Ali Hajizadeh, also said that a new generation of ballistic missiles was used during Friday's exercises. The U.S. has rejected a plea by U.N. officials to reverse a decision to declare Yemen's Ansarullah movement a terrorist group. The U.S. Deputy Ambassador to the U.N. said the designation would help move forward the political process to settle the Yemen conflict. Richard Mills was addressing a U.N. Security Council briefing that saw fierce criticism of the U.S. decision. On Sunday, Washington blacklisted the Ansarullah movement, which controls northern Yemen. U.N. officials have opposed the designation, citing humanitarian impact and dire consequences for the peace process in Yemen.
I am extremely concerned about the impact of the decision from the United States to designate Ansarullah as a foreign terrorist organization. We fear, in my mission, that there will be inevitably a chilling effect on my efforts to bring the parties together.
We are struggling now without the designation. With the designation, it's going to be catastrophic. It literally is going to be a death sentence to hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of innocent people in Yemen.
UN humanitarian Chief Mark Lowcock also urged Washington to reverse its decision. He said Ansarullah's designation could cause a famine not seen in the past four decades. The European Union also criticized the U.S., saying the designation could hinder aid deliveries to Yemen. The country has been devastated by the Saudi-led war that began in 2015. The UN has described Yemen the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Ansarullah and its allied army units are fighting Riyadh that is backed by Washington. International lawyer Edward Corrigan says the U.S. decision to blacklist Ansarullah would be another disaster for millions of people in Yemen.
A lot of commentators look at the Hutus, and they're based in Sana'a, as the real government, and then the Saudis and UAE and their allies are in the south, with their fracture too. The Saudis support one faction, the UAE supports another faction. There is Al-Qaeda elements. There are, people that are tied with the Yemeni government, but that's a confusing mess. But this is clearly a disaster to say that they're a terrorist group and then to impose all sorts of sanctions. The European Union, European countries are opposed to this. You also have the United Nations speaking out strongly against it.
Right.
And again, it's the poor people of Yemen, they're going to suffer the consequences. They're going to be starved into submission. The only tool the Trump administration has is a sledgehammer, and they just want to smash their opponents.
It was November of 2020 when the U.S. Acting Defense Secretary Chris Miller announced that the country would slash its troop levels to 2,500 in both Iraq and Afghanistan in the following year. The withdrawal of U.S. forces from Afghanistan has already been welcomed by top Afghan officials. They say the absence of foreign troops will not adversely affect the Afghan military. Here's more.
On October 7th, 2001, the US and British forces attacked Afghanistan. Later in November that year, there were 1,300 American troops in the country. They were increased to 100,000 in 2010. Anti-US sentiments had increased among Afghans, mainly due to its failures in protecting civilians as well as in uprooting terrorism and narcotics production. The Afghan government says international assistance to Afghan army will continue in 2021 amid the US withdrawal and controversial peace talks between Kabul and the Taliban. However, some top officials here say Kabul is militarily capable of coping with any emergency situation. Addressing a recent meeting in the Afghan Defense Ministry, President Ghani emphasized that the National Army is the symbol of the country's pride and that nothing will stop it from serving the country and the nation despite a possible reduction of foreign support.
I have repeatedly said, and I'm saying now, that we will not build roads in case of emergency situations, but the Afghan army will be fully active under any circumstances.
Top military officials in Kabul believe the withdrawal of foreign troops from Afghanistan will not create an opportunity for terrorists to win the war.
The potential withdrawal of foreign forces is not a matter of concern for us because 96% of operations are being conducted independently by our own forces. We receive aerial support from our international allies for the remaining 4%. It means that we are not concerned about the withdrawal of foreign forces.
Adding to the uncertainty surrounding the withdrawal of American forces from Afghanistan, U.S. President-elect Joe Biden will take office on January 20th as a sale to announce the official stance of his administration on U.S. Taliban deal that was inked back in February 2020. As official statistics show, America's longest war in Afghanistan has so far claimed the lives of over 4,000 U.S. troops, tens of thousands of Afghan military forces, and over 50,000 civilians. Sayed Amin Alami, Kabul.
China has reiterated its firm opposition to new U.S. sanctions on Chinese officials and companies.
The measures introduced by President Trump once again showed the world what unilateralism is, what is double standards, and what is bullying. China will take necessary measures to resolutely safeguard the legitimate rights and interests of Chinese enterprises and resolutely support Chinese enterprises in safeguarding their rights and interests in accordance with the law.
Foreign Ministry spokesman also accused U.S. President Donald Trump of generalizing the concept of national security, abusing national power, and repeatedly suppressing Chinese companies for no reason. On Thursday, the Trump administration imposed an investment ban on 9 more Chinese firms for alleged misdeeds in the South China Sea. The blacklisted firms with alleged ties to the Chinese military include plane maker Comac and phone maker Xiaomi Corporation. Sanctions are the latest in a series of measures by Trump against China amid escalating tensions between the two sides. U.S. federal prosecutors say President Trump's supporters, who stormed Capitol Hill last week, intended to capture and assassinate elected officials. Prosecutors offered that view in a filing asking a judge to detain Jacob Chansley. He is the QAnon conspiracy theorist who stood at the desk of Vice President Mike Pence in the Senate. According to the detention memo, Chansley left a threatening note for Pence. The prosecutors say Chansley's words and actions are part of evidence showing the intention of the attackers. Trump supporters breached the Capitol during its meeting to certify Joe Biden's win in the presidential November. In the November presidential election, 5 people were killed as a result. The U.S. Justice Department has brought over 80 criminal cases in connection with the violence. U.S. President Donald Trump's days in the White House are numbered. He will soon become a former U.S. president, but his impact on American politics and society will not end anytime soon.
Today I am calling on all Americans to...
Donald Trump has undoubtedly been the most controversial president of the United States. He has managed to make sworn enemies and inspire diehard supporters all across a divided America. His term in office is almost over now, but not the mixed feelings and fierce controversy surrounding the outgoing U.S. president. This week, Trump set a new record. He became the first ever American commander-in-chief to be impeached for a second time by the House of Representatives. Trump now faces trial in the Senate for allegedly inciting a group of his extremist supporters to violently attack Congress last week. In the worst possible scenario, he could be barred from ever holding public office again. That would practically mean the end of his political career. Back in 2019, Trump was impeached over his dealings with Ukraine, but finally acquitted by the Senate. This time, things could look a lot different, as a growing number of his fellow Republicans have said openly that the embattled president must be convicted. Trump has never been so isolated. Many members of his inner circle have either abandoned the lame duck president or seem to have distanced themselves from him. The outgoing president has also lost his cherished Twitter account, and many large corporations are boycotting him. Trump could be wiped off the face of U.S. politics, but his legacy will live on as dangerous divisions deepen in American society.
His main legacy for America is that he's the only president in the history, in American history, to have been impeached twice. Through his mismanagement and his ignorance, he allowed the COVID-19 pandemic to ravage this country, to decimate the economy, and he's the worst president in American history.
400,000 small. This is expected to complicate things for Joe Biden from day one in office.
That we're in the middle of the once in several generations economic crisis.
Trump's successor will have to deal with many domestic and foreign challenges, but right now leading a divided America will probably be the toughest task facing the future president of the United States. Joe Biden will have to deal with the fallout of Trump's chaotic leadership from the very first days in office. The next U.S. president will be sworn in on January the 20th, as you know. Trump insists that he will not attend Joe Biden's inauguration. Trump's dangerous rhetoric and actions are causing headaches for federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies. They're now busy preparing for the possibility of more violence.
The United States will soon have a new president. Joe Biden will take office in the coming days. His upcoming swearing-in ceremony will, however, be different from any past presidential inauguration, all thanks to Trump. Security concerns intensified over the past week. Federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies are taking extraordinary measures to secure the ceremony in the capital of the nation. Authorities say they have received information indicating the possibility of more violence during the inauguration. The FBI, for instance, says armed protests are being planned all across America. More than 20,000 National Guard troops will be among the forces that will try to secure President-elect Joe Biden's swearing-in ceremony. Security forces say they want to prevent a repeat of last week's deadly insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. The developments of the past weeks in the U.S. have raised serious questions about the credibility of American democracy. Was Biden democratically elected? Authorities have found no evidence of irregularities. So why does Trump still insist that the November election was stolen? And why do so many millions of Americans still believe what he says? Some observers believe the post-election chaos in the United States shows a growing lack of trust in the system and elections.
That's evidence that the experiment called democracy right now isn't working. The fact that, well, on the one hand, the fact that we expect there to be a orderly transition of government is a good thing. But what we have to go through to ensure that there is an orderly transition of government does not bode well for America.
Biden will probably try to improve the situation, but the divisions in the United States are too deep and cannot be mended overnight.
So tonight, I'd like to talk to you about our way forward.
The U.S. tech industry is taking on President Donald Trump with just days left in his term. In a flurry of quick moves this week, Twitter permanently banned Trump's account and Facebook kicked him off his platform. Its platform, actually. This is leading to calls in the United States for social media giants to be regulated. Our very own Ramin Mazahiri is in Chicago with this report.
From Main Street to the heads of state of U.S. allies like Germany and Mexico, massive condemnation has erupted towards Silicon Valley. So-called big tech companies based in the United States, such as Twitter, Facebook, Google, Amazon, and Apple, are accused of waging an ever-increasing wave of political censorship, which shows no sign of ceasing, and which worryingly shows no sign of being able to be reined in. Despite receiving nearly 75 million votes, Twitter and Facebook recently banned U.S. President Donald Trump permanently. Right-wing social media site Parler has essentially ceased to exist after a combined attack from the big tech monopolies. The seemingly partisan nature of the domestic censorship has many Democrats supporting the moves, while Republicans often contend that the influence of big tech cost Trump the election. What's certain is that big tech has made a polarized American society even more divided.
The partisanship of our media and the decline in civil liberties and just tolerance of viewpoint tolerance, I think, are two things that are, maybe some of it's inevitable from computerization and media, but some of it clearly is used because it serves its purposes of the power elites.
The push for censorship appeared to begin when Democratic Party elites began pinning the blame on social media for the unexpected loss of Hillary Clinton in the 2016 presidential election. However, others put the actual start at the U.S.-led wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, because that's when the American public began to be forced to accept a rollback of their human and individual rights.
We had a lot of fallout from that, and we're still suffering from that. So now, what you do overseas comes back to haunt you here. So we've deprived our citizens of rights. Now it comes back to us in the form of Facebook censorship, Twitter censorship, and now it becomes naked partisan.
Supporters of Silicon Valley say that they aren't part of the press and that as private companies, they can legally ban whomever they want. It's an explanation which isn't likely to end the mounting criticism of their increasing role in partisan politics in the U.S. and around the world. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
For several months, scientists have been aware of multiple strains of the novel coronavirus circulating in the United States. Yet, one specific mutation called B.1.1.7 is alarming epidemiologists because of how much more transmissible rate, says Nicole Carley's writer in an article titled, "A New COVID Strain is 70% More Transmissible and Already Widespread in the U.S. Stay tuned for the details, please. For several months, scientists have been aware of multiple strains of the novel coronavirus circulating in the United States. Yet one specific mutation called B.1.1.7 is alarming epidemiologists because of how much more transmissible rate. According to two separate studies published by researchers in the United Kingdom, the variant originated in the UK between late summer and early autumn 2020. In early December, it started to alarm researchers as it appeared more frequently in SARS-CoV-2 samples in southern England, a sign that it could be a new dominant strain and perhaps more contagious than previous ones. Indeed, according to preliminary research on the strain, that is the case. Researchers estimate that the variant has an increased transmission rate of 50 to 70% compared to other variants in the UK. What that means is that this strain is infecting more people. There are mathematical models that have been put forth that suggest that this can be transmitted more rapidly than the kind of current strain that we have, explained Dr. George Rutherford, a professor of epidemiology at the University of California, San Francisco. Rutherford added that the concern around B.1.1.7 is that it appears to have a competitive advantage to the strains that have already been circulating. Specifically, the mathematical model Rutherford is referring to is the basic reproductive number known as R, and that's the number of secondary cases you can expect, on average, for every primary case, Rutherford said. So, if there are 10 primary cases and 14 secondary cases, the effective reproductive number is 1.4. When it comes to viral clones, epidemiologists want the R number to be below 1, meaning fewer than 1 person is transmitted the virus for each one who contracts it. If R is below 1, that is what leads to extinction, Rutherford said. Researchers estimate that B117's transmission rate is between 1.5 and 1.7. Part of the so-called success of this variant could be the mutations that have happened within the variant. They appear to affect the spike protein that attaches to human cells, essentially improving its ability to bind to receptors on the cells. What's interesting about this new variant is that it has 17 mutations, and of those 17, 8 of them are in the spike protein area, said Dean Blomberg, chief of pediatric infectious diseases and associate professor in the Department of Pediatrics at the University of California, Davis. That's important because the spike protein serves as the initial attachment factor for the virus to receptors in our cells. Blomberg noted that we need to be immune to that spike protein to prevent infection. Preliminary research also suggests that patients with this variant have higher levels of viral load compared to people who don't have the variant. Currently, there is no evidence that this variant causes more severe illness or increased risk of death. Notably, the vaccines and monoclonal antibodies, which are the lab-made proteins that incite an immune response, have not been tailored to fight the B11 strain. According to the Centers for Disease and Control and Prevention, the virus would likely need to accumulate multiple mutations in the spike protein to evade immunity induced by vaccines or by natural infection. Since the United Kingdom's research, various cases of people being infected with the variant have been found in the United States. Many of these patients had no travel history, suggesting that it is already widespread. Recently, a man in upstate New York, 24 people in San Diego, and more people in Colorado, Florida, and Georgia have been found to have the super infectious B11 strain. With a higher transmission rate and perhaps higher viral loads, current mitigation strategies like wearing a mask and social distancing remain effective, but they're not completely bulletproof. They absolutely still work, Rutherford said. What we know is that masks not only prevent infection, but if they fail to prevent infection, they are associated with less severe disease. They presumably cut down on the in-column size. Blomberg agreed. Masking and social distancing is going to work for all these variants, Blomberg said. The only question is, if you're not wearing a mask and not social distancing, how efficiently are these viruses going to be transmitted? Blomberg said there may be a higher likelihood of transmission with the new variant, even when proper preventative measures are taken. Masking and social distancing is good, but it's not 100% effective, Blomberg said. It's all playing the odds, and the odds are that if you're coming into contact with somebody with the new variant, even masking and social distancing, there is increased risk of transmission to you.
This is A to Z. An Introduction to Islamic Lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, Justice Among Children. One of the capital mistakes is discrimination in treatment of children. Some people favor their older and so-called senior child, and others favor their younger child. Sometimes they exceed the bounds and reserve all of their kindness, property, and affections for one of them, and deprive the others totally. This provokes the fire of malice and envy in the hearts of the ones left out, and in time, this will develop into enmity among themselves and vindictiveness towards their parents, and they may even seek vengeance in the society. Now, some things are natural, right? So when there is a newly born baby, everybody seems to love that baby, right? We're not talking about that love that you have for like a newborn baby. We're talking about when your children are slightly grown up. That's when, you know, sometimes some parents, unfortunately, end up giving more attention and more level and status to some of their children and start to ignore some others. And there are different reasons for that, and we're going to go over that in future programs. But when it comes to children, we're expected, because they're all our offsprings, they're all our children, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants us to give them their due share. We cannot be unjust with our own children. Sometimes some parents end up being like that without thinking too much. So this is what we're pointing at, that, you know, give equal attention to all your children. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing justice among children, and we said that sometimes some parents end up being unjust towards some of their children. This is what we were discussing before the break. How does that happen? We're going to discuss at length. You know, there are different reasons for such a behavior. But first thing first, Islam expects us to be just towards our children. We cannot be unjust towards some and be just towards some. We cannot give more attention to some and less attention to some. Similarly, when it comes to our property, Islam expects us to do justice, you know, and this is important. Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam has said, "Observe justice among your children, just as you would like that they render justice among you." Brothers and sisters, discrimination means the unjust treatment of children on the grounds of appearance, gender, aptitude, skills, and family expectations. We cannot discriminate towards the children, like one of our children. This is something un-Islamic to do. It means treating children adversely without any appropriate justification. A negative outlook or prejudice can lead to discrimination. This is usually observed in parents who choose to focus on children who exhibit greater skills, aptitude, and talent. You know, one of your child is really smart, and when they go to school, you know, they're distinguished students. The other one is not so bright, right? In their academics, they're not so good. So naturally, you know, sometimes parents start to invest more in that brighter kid. This is not something right. This is not something Islamic in nature. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
It is about a new political formation called Trumpism, with its mix of white supremacy, voter suppression, market fundamentalism, and authoritarianism. Trumpism will have an afterlife long after Trump leaves the White House, says Henry A. Girox, writer, in an article published under the heading, Attack on Capitol Affirms Trumpism Will Live On After Trump Leaves White House. Stay tuned for more. The storming of the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C. by a mob of President Donald Trump supporters, Trump's condemnation of Vice President Mike Pence for refusing to intervene in the election process, and the attempt by a number of Republican politicians to promote conspiracy theories and dangerous propaganda provided yet another example that Americans no longer live in the shadow of authoritarianism and have tipped over into the abyss. Under Trump's rule, lies, ignorance, encouragement of white supremacy, and a thirst for violence have taken on a more lethal direction. Within the last few years, it has moved from violence waged against immigrants, black and brown people, and the poor, to the violence of a right-wing mob attacking the police, rampaging through the Capitol and occupying the House and Senate chambers. Trump not only advertised a call for a demonstration among his supporters, he also brought to the event a history of encouraging his supporters to express themselves through violence. The mob's actions followed a speech in which Trump once again claimed the election was fraudulent and he urged the crowd to march on the Capitol. What Trump and the mob shared was their hatred of democracy. However fragile, and the discredited belief that the election was stolen. In the aftermath of the mob violence, Trump sent out a series of tweets supporting the actions of the violent mob, only to be later removed by Twitter. At the same time, the democratic and domestic terrorism that took place on January 6th was about more than Trump's lies and his use of language in the service of violence. It is also about a new political formation called Trumpism, with its mix of white supremacy, voter suppression, market fundamentalism, and authoritarianism. Trumpism will have an afterlife long after Trump leaves the White House. This counter-revolution had been building for years in the dark recess of conspiracy theories, lies, white rage, and hatred of those considered enemies of the people. This was Trumpism in full bloom, with all of its ignorance, hatred, and penchant for lawlessness on full display. But it also testified to the notion that fascism begins with language and ends with violence. The mob violence aimed at shutting down the counting of electoral ballots was reminiscent of the thugs that roamed the streets of Germany in 1930s, attempting to brutalize dissenters and those considered other in the absurd Nazi notion of racial and political cleansing. Trump has unleashed his fascist impulses consistently through the language of violence and divisiveness, aided by the right-wing media such as Fox News, Breitbart, and others. Under the Trump administration, ignorance has turned lethal. Moreover, as David Teo Goldberg has argued, politics today is nothing short of a civil war, marked by divisions and disunity in which life for most of the inhabitants of the United States becomes both unbearable and dangerous. Trumpism is the culmination of a cultural and fascist politics that has been evolving and intensifying for years through the incitement of lies, conspiracy theories, and the heated rhetoric of racism and a brutal war on the welfare state and working class people. The acts of domestic terrorism on display in the storming of the Capitol reach far beyond the toxic personal politics, incompetency, and corruption of Trump himself. Such violence has a long history in the U.S. and has been normalized under the aegis of Trumpism as a right-wing populist movement, which Trump brought to the surface of American politics as a badge of honor. The violence in Washington, D.C. did not begin with the march by right-wing fanatics and white supremacists. It erupted more openly with Trump in 2016 when he seized upon and manipulated the fears of powerless whites and white supremacists who imagined themselves as under siege and as oppressed outsiders. For 4 years, he has incited violence through attempts to inspire and energize his white supremacists and fascist followers. Every era produces a language and cultural markers that offer insights into its politics, values, and vision of the past, present, and future. This is especially true regarding the economic, public, and cultural influence of the Trump's presidency and mode of governance. Trumpism is not limited to the personal behavior of Trump. It refers less to a person, to a dangerous movement and social base that operates as a social pathology whose endpoint is the destruction of democracy itself. As a new cultural and political construct, Trumpism merges a ruthless capitalist rationality, widening inequality and a commitment to white supremacy. These forces have deep historical roots in the United States. However, what is distinctive is that they have congealed into a unique political and cultural formation under the Trump regime, marked by an emotively charged, spectacularized, and updated form of authoritarianism that echoes elements of a fascist past. In the current historical moment, Trumpism has intensified and quickened the dark forces of hate, racism, ultra-nationalism, and white nationalism. Trumpism has accelerated a culture of fear while using a variety of tools of repression, ranging from mass incarceration, surveillance, and police brutality to a full-fledged attack on those who would bring reality into play and hold power accountable, to enforce a worldview in which lawlessness and political corruption have become the order of the day. As the enemy of democracy, Trumpism is a mix of a capacious authoritarian ideology, a right-wing propaganda machine, and a fascist ethos. Its power and influence far exceed Trump's presidency, and it will not come to an end with the election of Biden. In its afterlife, it will continue to sabotage democracy in the name of minority rule, and its only endpoint is the tyranny of authoritarianism. As an anti-democratic ethos, it has opened a political chasm in which any attempt to unify the nation appears almost impossible. Trump's relentless politics of divisiveness is a toxic platform for inciting violence, affirming a culture of cruelty, and promoting a politics of exclusion and racial purification. Trumpism exhibited no concern for the unnecessary deaths of hundreds of thousands of infected and dying from COVID-19. All the more appalling since the deadly effects of the raging pandemic were largely the result of the bungling leadership of an administration that chose conspiracy theories over science, replaced the authority of public health officials with Fox News incompetence, and lied about the severity of a virus that has spread through the population and across the globe like an out-of-control wildfire. As a death-dealing form of cultural politics, Trumpism further removed the government from any sense of social responsibility. Trumpism is focused on not only capturing institutions of the state for personal and political gain, but also redefining and controlling language, the social media, and popular culture as a way of emptying politics of any substance by turning it into a spectacle. Language now operates in the service of violence, and all forms of criticism are relegated to the category of fake news, unworthy of serious reflection or critical analysis. Trumpism, at its core, is a cultural politics that shreds any viable notion of shared values, national unity, and in doing so, transforms essential human connections into bonds of distrust and fear. It views the space of the social common good and demonic values as a register of weakness and resentment, bristling with hatred, if not a seething logic of disposability. Trumpism reached into every niche and crack of civil and political society, and in doing so, cross-pollinated politics, culture, and everyday life with a range of right-wing policies. Authoritarian impulses and the emerging presence of right-wing movements. Under Trumpism, the centrality of education to politics became obvious with the growing use of 21st century cultural apparatuses such as Twitter, Facebook, Google, along with media outlets such as Fox News, Newsmax, and Breitbart. These pedagogical apparatuses produced a distinctive cultural space that feathered the marriage of power and manufactured civic illiteracy and worked to eliminate the crucial question of what civic education and literacy should accomplish in a democracy. Favoring instant reactions and a culture of immediacy, the new media and new image-based cultural forms turned chaos, catastrophe, and collapse into a spectacle that called forth instant gratification along with a kind of digital sublime in which such platforms are mythologized as both convenient and infallible. Trumpism performs politics as a form of entertainment and digital drama. It does so by transforming the political realm and society into a form of spectacularized theater, not unlike what French theorists said, a society of a spectacle. As a right-wing cultural apparatus, spectacle of disintegration, a tribal ethos, Trumpism, politics, became an all-out encompassing tool of propaganda and pedagogy of repression, functioning as a form of cultural politics under the control of a corporate elite. As a reactionary cultural conduit, Trumpism undermines critical dialogue, shared values, shared responsibilities, and informed judgments, while promoting authoritarian narratives that disdain historical consciousness, critical thinking, and the idea, if not principles, of participatory democracy. Hard boundaries, precarity, a culture of fear, untrampled individualism, an all-encompassing ethos of self-help, and a profound unease constitute the currency of Trumpism. In this instance, economic justice, meaningful solidarities, and the common good are removed from the discourse of politics and citizenship.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 41 meters 7300 kHz for the Indian subcontinent and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and IranSat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you.
your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Dear listeners, welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio. As we mentioned, paradise, something we all strive for. It is a particular, again, place in inverted commas, where we are able to manifest certain perfections. We are able to attain certain perfections that we cannot attain in this temporal and material world. And as we mentioned, it's something that comes with trial, tribulation, effort. That is something that is attained and not just given freely. And if, inshallah, by the intercession of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, as I mentioned also in one of our previous programs, the intercession is not just something that, you know, a sinner, but rather it is something even a good person can get. A person can be taken to the higher levels by means of intercession. But rather here we should say tawassul. That by seeking tawassul in this world, we are able to fulfill our duties in order to attain that paradise that we seek, and that paradise has been promised to the righteous, to the truthful, to the believers. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, you know, in defining or describing the lowest level of paradise. Obviously, if this is the lowest level that the Imam is describing, what is the highest levels? Obviously, there's in other traditions that we will mention. We know that paradise has levels. The hellfire also has levels. What is the reality of levels here is another discussion that we will leave to the philosophers and the mystics to actually expound on this. But in a theological way, we know that it is levels, that certain people will be in a certain area and some people will be in another area. You know, just to kind of make things more clearer. Even though this is probably not the case in reality. So here the Imam says that for the one who occupies, again, to occupies is the means is taking over a place. So again, this is because of lack of language. The lowest station in paradise. So if a person was there, and if all the humans and all the jinn were to come to this individual as his guest, right? So everybody comes, and this person lays out the sufra, lays out the tablecloth, and he invites them to a meal. All the humans and all the jinn. As the hadith says, and al-jinn wal-ins, and all of them. He would be able to feed them food and drink, all of them, to such an extent that nothing will be diminished from him. That nothing will be gone from him. He will not lose anything. This is what the lowest level of paradise. That this is how much blessings and benefit that this person, the lowest level, will be able to. He will be able to feed and satiate the entire human race and jinn, and nothing will